One, two, three, hello and welcome to the Diz Dads podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Rittmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record podcast number 448 for Sunday, November 6th, 2016, are Brad Coates.
Greetings, Disney gents.
Tim Hicks.
Hey, live podcast. That's great. I hope everyone's having a great Sunday. I'm here.
And Philip Holt.
Howdy, guys.
So tonight we're going to be continuing the If I Ran series, this time talking about what our panelists would do if they were running Disneyland. But before we get into that discussion too much, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor, Fantastic Memories Travel, and its Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and a Mouse Master agent would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so that you can focus on fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. I also have just a couple of housekeeping things to take care of here before we get too deep into the show. You know, during this past month, all month during October, we were conducting an online listener survey, and we got some great responses. We really appreciate everybody who participated, but I did promise that one lucky respondent who chose to include their name with their survey submission would have their name drawn, and that listener or that respondent would win a pair of Diz Dads logo coffee mugs. And so since the survey is now closed, I've drawn the winner. Congratulations to Jason Ballard, who is the winner of our drawing.
Woo, Jason!
Congratulations, Jason. Yes, here we go.
Yes.
I would like to thank the Academy.
And give him my address if he wants to send the extra one to me.
I'd like to thank all the little people that got me here.
Yes, well, we'll send those mugs on out to Jason. I'm pretty sure we've got an address for you from a t-shirt order in the past, but I'll shoot you an email first and confirm that address with you. But we should get those out to you in the next week or so. Congratulations, and again, thanks to everybody who participated in the survey. Now, the other thing, kind of little housekeeping bit I wanted to take care of. I've mentioned this recently a couple of times, just sort of at the end of a show, but we are going to be closing down the Diz Dads discussion boards. We're going to close them for good around the end of the year. Basically, they're not getting used a whole lot. The software that they run on, vBulletin, turns out to have some pretty serious security flaws that appear to just be not fixable. So between those, you know, two things and the fact that they're pretty expensive to continue hosting, we just figured it made more sense to shut them down. We are, however, in the process of taking those elements that people have made some use of and trying to take that functionality and move it over to the blog. So to that end, there are a couple of pieces that have already moved. One is that if you look on the blog at dizdads.com under the home menu on the any page, really, but you go to that home menu, the last item is now an item called calendar. If you go to that, you'll see a calendar displayed. That calendar is actually a shared Google calendar. And anybody who wants to have access to that shared calendar, be able to add information to that calendar, can just send a request to be added. Send that request to admin, A-D-M-I-N, admin@dizdads.com, and just let us know that you want access to be able to add information to the shared calendar. We'll go ahead and, you know, once we can confirm we know who you are, we'll give you the ability to add things to that calendar. And that way, that's a way for us to sort of share information about trips coming up down the road so that we can coordinate meetups and, you know, let people know you've got a couple of spare spots in an ADR, something like that. So you'll find a calendar on that page. The other thing that we added is the podcast planning is moving to the blog as well. So if you look under the podcast menu, you'll see that there are a couple of podcast planning menu items that are now there. I'll continue to update those and put new planning items on that menu. So as we go forward, that's where we'll be asking volunteers to, you know, instead of posting in the message board, we'll ask you to comment on the blog. It's the same function, really, but just a different place to look. And it'll allow us to continue doing the same kinds of things without having to worry about the security issues with the boards. So thank you for being patient with us as we transition into this. I do think that ultimately it, you know, shouldn't really be functionally much different. All right. So enough housekeeping trivia, all that mess. It's time to get on to the subject of this podcast. So if I ran Disneyland, you know, gentlemen, We've already done the If I Ran Walt Disney World podcast. We've talked about a couple of these issues, so you know, hopefully people kind of have a sense of how these shows go. I'm going to start you off on this one, just like I've started, you know, everybody off on the last couple, and that is to ask you to talk a little bit, one at a time, about your big picture agenda. If you were the boss, if you were in charge of running Disneyland, what's your big picture agenda? And how do you decide what gets your priority attention? Because as much as these are, you know, blue sky type shows, there are realities that we all have to deal with, and budget is one of them. And, you know, managing the reality of the parks is really what this is ultimately about. So, let's see, Brad, I think you may have been at Disneyland most recently, so I'm going to put you on the spot and make you go first and talk to us a little bit about what your big picture agenda would be for Disneyland.
Oh, of course you would. I was going to text in and say, don't let me go first. No, you know, for me, yeah, I just got back not too long ago from Disneyland. I think for me, for Disneyland, the number one area of priority is figuring out what they're a way somehow to view for expansion. The problem with Disneyland, and it's a problem that Disney World also deals with, but with Disney World having multiple parks, having far less locals, they can spread out the issues. With Disneyland having just the Disneyland park and having the limited space, and with DCA, the limited space, it's not going to be an easy solve. I mean, it's just not. It's a landlocked. It's always been an issue. And yet the thing that's always amazed me is that right when everybody says, well, there's nothing that can be done and there's no land that can be bought, suddenly they buy up land and then the rumors start. You know, there was talk that the space they just bought that they're turning into a parking lot was going to turn into a possible third gate of some type. And, of course, it ended up being a parking lot. As they go forward, the only way they're going to be able to deal with the crowds and with the stress level where they're at, changing some of the things within the park would be great. Adapting maybe Toontown. We love Toontown, but either renovating it or doing something with it so that it's more, you're using the land more effectively. because face it, it's a great place to go get a couple of great shots and some cool creative spots, and to go ride Roger Rabbit, and then make a quick visit to Mickey and Minnie's house. And then the rest of that space is just wasted space. They've only got so much space they can keep redoing inside of the parks. They're going to need to look somehow, some way, towards opening up a third gate. So if I was running Disneyland, my number one priority would be to focus on that, that finding a way. And this is, of course, this is long term. This clearly can't be done in a hurry. But to me, that's the number one criteria that I would be looking at to move forward, is how do we figure out a way to expand so that we can continue to handle the crowds that are coming to Disneyland.
All right. So, Tim, Brad is going to focus on expansion and finding room to, you know, really offer more capacity to guests, is what it sounds like to me. What's your priority, and where are you going to focus your attention first?
Well, this is going to take a huge sum of money to do what I'm thinking. But when I was there in August, and this is really no different from any other time I was there, the problem that exists with Disneyland as opposed to the other parks is the lack of being immersed. And that's what Disney World particularly is about, is immersion, total immersion in the vacation experience. You know, once you cross under that Walt Disney World sign, you are away from the rest of the world. You are in, you know, a place all to itself where, you know, you can let your mind relax from everything else that's going on in real life. And that's not the case at Disneyland. You take an Uber or take a taxi or take a shuttle or drive your car or whichever it is, and you're driving down the road right in front of the park. And once you get parked, you know, you go in and you don't get that same feeling of immersion, of leaving normal life behind. And that's something that, you know, when you talk about things in the really, really big 50,000 foot, you know, picture view, I think is where they can really make it more appealing, more of a destination. I mean, it's kind of, okay, that was Walt's original vision, and we've taken it so far with the other parks. And yet we've left Disneyland, the Disneyland Resort and Disney California Adventure behind in that regard. So what I'm thinking is you have to come up with the capital to buy out, I mean, just flat buy out all of those hotels, especially the ones that are right across the street that are kind of aging and in bad need of renovation anyway. Buy them out. Do something, you know, work with the city to do something else with that main street that comes through there. Make it, make it accessible for, a Magical Express type shuttle from either LAX or John Wayne Airport. Rip down the old aging hotels and transform them into hotels that are, you know, worthy of any of the other parks around the world that have, you know, that same feeling, that same that's the word I'm looking for, you know, the look, the feel, you know, the theming, that's it, the theming. So like you've got the whole series of all-star sports and music and movies, and you've got Pop Century, and you know, and then you've got the upscale resorts, and they all follow a theme that follows throughout the hotel. And I think the Grand Californian is the closest thing to it. But that's still not quite on par with the other parks, in my opinion. And you know, if you want to argue with me, go right ahead and let me hear it. But that's what I'm thinking.
I think you're raising a really interesting point here, because, you know, Walt Disney World has created all of these different kinds of themed environments, right? I mean, you've got something that is in the deluxe resorts, things that I think are maybe a little more similar to what you're doing in Disneyland in terms of sort of immersively themed environments that aren't explicitly Disney intellectual property environments, for lack of a better way to put it. Some of that at the Disneyland Hotel, but it's very subtle.
Yeah, it doesn't go nearly far enough. You're exactly right.
And it's surrounded by the world around it.
Exactly. I mean, you can't
escape it. It's out the window. The difference is Disneyland is you go to an amazement park. At Disney World, you go to a world. You go under that bridge, that sign, and you've left the other world. It's Disney's world. So
the look and feel of Disneyland is somewhere between like a Six Flags park and the real deal that to us is Walt Disney World. You know, it lacks that total immersion.
Right. And
I'd say that within the parks, it does it as good, if not better, as far as total immersion. But you're right. The surrounding, it's just you have to cross in through the gate before you get to the immersion. Where Disney World, you can be driving down the road. You're not even to the park yet.
Right. Or even the buses that are going, you know, between the resorts and the parks, and you're just, you know, you still, even though there are streets or other civilian cars around, you don't think about it because you're immersed in it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that Tim has suggested, you know, is to do something with the hotels that are nearby. And I mean, I think that may be a legitimate opportunity, right? Is even if you can't stay consistently in the immersive environment, at least you could move from one immersive environment to another, right? So instead of going from, you know, Toontown to you know, the Fairfield Inn,
right,
which is you know, a great place to stay, but it's a Fairfield Inn. You know, and maybe instead of that, you go from Toontown to the same location, but now that it's owned by Disney, it's an immersive Toontown experience.
Yeah, and you can make it very unique to California. Make it the Disney Groves Resort, you know, where it's all themed on, you know, the California citrus industry. I mean, you can come up with a lot of things. I mean, Animal Kingdom is not necessarily Mickey Mouse themed, but it has a theme that is very attractive to a lot of us. And I think you can do something like that. But as Brad was mentioning, you know, the fact that it's landlocked, there's only one way out of that, and that's to, you know, to buy up properties around as best you can.
Sure. All right, guys, I'm going to try something really quickly to maybe address the audio issue that the folks in the chat room are talking about. So if y'all bear with me for just 1 second, I'm going to stop the broadcast for a second, tweak a setting, and then start the broadcast right back up. So hang on with
me. Okay.
Sounds good. Ming.
You beat me to it. It's just what I was thinking. We need some Jeopardy music.
Okay.
And we're
thank
back.
You for your patience. We should be back now. I basically tweaked a setting on my end a little bit, using a little more computer resources to deal with the quality of the audio we're sending out. Hopefully that'll help overcome any shortcomings of my internet connection. For the future, you should all be adding my, adding a good word for the arrival of my Google Fiber install, which is, you know, on the docket, but waiting as they build out the infrastructure. So as soon as we get that, we should have fewer of these internet-related issues. All right, so Tim wants more immersive environments. You know, seems somewhat similar to some of the concerns that Brad was raising about wanting to provide greater capacity to provide for guests. Philip, what's your priority when you're running Disneyland?
After the Disney World broadcast, you know, I wanted a fifth gate. And this time with Disneyland, like the others had stated, you know, you're kind of really limited to what you could do. So I just kind of stared at the map a little bit. And I thought about... when I was there, like Bugs Land just did not, I mean, it was, everything was a walk on, you know, there wasn't any lines, which is good, but it didn't seem that crowded. Not many people were going to it. And with the changeover of Tower of Terror, I figured that would be the perfect place to add a Marvel Land. you know, right next to interesting.
So most of the buzz about a possible Marvel land, and that's actually on the agenda to talk about. So you know, you're kind of jump starting us there.
I did that too. But when I was doing my research, of course, I came across that. I was like, well, it's not a new idea, at least. But
well, what's interesting is that most of the buzz has suggested, and no pun intended, that it's, you know, buzz and bugs land. But, you know, most of the buzz has suggested that Marvel Land would kind of go just adjacent to where Bugs Land is to some extent. And
it's actually right behind Tower Terror. Yeah, it's right behind
Tower
Terror. Yeah. Yeah.
If you remember that pathway from Bugs Land to Tower of Terror, where there's a big gate where the cars come out to go to Cars Land, if you've ever seen that, or they bring the parade out of those big gates,
yeah,
that's where they're supposedly doing it, is back behind there. So it's basically just beside Bugs Land and right behind Tower of Terror is where
they're they've got the walls up, so there's something going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, some of that is related to the Tower of Terror work, but you know, yeah, there's a lot of there's very likely some Marvel stuff going on, you know, behind that gate as well.
Well, also in the future, if they could expand over Bugs Land, if they needed to add more to it.
So. Sure, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. It's right there.
Right. And it did always strike me. I mean, look, I have to admit, I love the theming of Bugs Land. I think that it was, in some ways, sort of a snapshot of things to come from Imagineering, right? Showing that they were kind of coming back into doing truly immersive theme park lands. But it always did strike me as a little odd that, you know, a Bug's Life got an entire land devoted to it. I mean, it's a significant film for Pixar, obviously, but really?
And when Cars Land came in, that pretty much overshadowed Bugs Land, definitely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And I look at it as, okay, you know, in Disney World, in Hollywood Studios, you had the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids little area that, you know, it was great for a while, but it's kind of lost its luster. Now that's going to be gone in Florida. So, you know, how long is Bugs Life in California for this life, you know?
Well, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, it's certainly ripe for an update to something new, and obviously, you know, Marvel is the thing that's at the top of everybody's list, it seems, for, you know, something new to head into the parks. So
one thing about a place like Bugs Life, though, is that it's really all rides for little small kids. And the reality is, for little small kids, for us, we look at Bugs Life and we go, that's outdated, and who's even interested in that? Well, to a child, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is, they don't know what that is when they're, you know, a lot of them when they're younger, the ones that would ride the Bugs Life rides. I think that's why places like Bugs Life last as long as they do, is because as long as it's themed really good for children and they're the ones they're drawing, they don't have a point of reference yet. But with all that said, I still think it's probably time for some of those rides to go. Well, there's a lot more technology that could be used and create a much better environment.
You got Bugs Life and you've got Cars Land butted right up against each other right there. And all of Cars Land, most of Cars Land stuff is kids' rides too. So,
that's
you know, it makes the adults look at it and go, meh, I'll go around the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So those are good points. And I think we've got a good idea of sort of the overall agenda that each of you would bring to Disneyland. So I'm going to start kind of poking and prodding a little bit about some topics that I think are of particular concern at Disneyland right now and really need the attention of, you know, good leadership. So this first one is still a pretty big question, but, you know, we've already got a new really super deluxe hotel that is under construction at Disneyland. So there's obviously some focus coming to Disneyland. You know, again, sort of we're returning to something that keeps coming up there, which is this need to make Disneyland more of a tourist destination theme park and not just a local/regional park. So with that, you know, coming, how do you balance the needs of those annual pass holders who are the bread and butter of Disneyland, who, you know, pay the bills consistently there, with the tourists who are probably the big, you know, growth market for Disneyland. Because it seems to me a lot of the time, you know, those two groups have very different interests in what they want to see happen. Tim, we'll turn to you first this time. And what are you going to do to balance those, you know, every weekend annual pass holder folks with the tourists?
That's a really good question because, you know, you think about, okay, as you said, it's the locals that are the bread and butter of the place. They're there all the time. But, okay, so I start trying to get into their heads and going, okay, what do they like and what do they not like? And while you still need that slice of Walt Disney memorabilia, you need to feel attached to Snow White and Peter Pan and Dumbo and all that. You have to wonder how many of the locals are going, seen it, you know, been there, done that. It's been there for eons and eons and eons. And granted, the Dumbo ride is going nowhere. If anything, they'll do dueling Dumbos like they did, you know, in Walt Disney World. But the dark rides, you know, you think about, you know, in Disney World, Mr. Toad's went away in what was it, the late 1990s, I think. Snow White's Scary Adventures, you know, all those kids' dark rides.
Right.
You have to wonder if those are very limited as to their viability and future timing. So what is it that what they want? Well, Californians have the advantage of having places like Six Flags Magic Mountain that is just chock-a-block full of amazing thrill rides. And Disneyland is not really meant to be that. It isn't supposed to be that. But, you know, to the extent that the locals are expecting that, what can you do? Where do you trade it off and still keep, you know, the spirit of Walt Disney alive? It's a real conundrum, you know. So there's only so much you can do. For example, I think about how people are talking. You know, people talk about what is it? Is it Hong Kong or is it France where they have the Dragon's Lair underneath the castle?
That's in Paris.
Okay, Paris. That's what I was thinking. And you got nothing like that there. You know, you could do something like that. The thrill rides mainly belong to DCA. Is there anything that you can do in Disneyland itself? Well, they don't have a Barnstormer like Disney World does. That's kind of a, you know, a kid's roller coaster, but it's a roller coaster nonetheless.
No, actually, they do. They've got Goofy Sky.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they got it in DCA.
Yeah, Goofy Sky School. Yeah, true.
It's the same.
Oh, although that's more of a mouse, whatever that you call that.
Mousetrap kind of ride.
Yeah.
But
they still have the one in Toontown. That's basically Barnstormer.
Basically the same thing. Okay.
I forget what the name of it is. Do you remember what it is, Aaron? Anybody remember what that one in Toontown is?
Are we talking? No, I'm
Disneyland Toontown.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Is that Gadget's Go Coaster?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I think so. That's the one. It's really literally just like Barnstormer.
So, yeah. So you've got those things, but you've got things that are aging, things that and you have to, you know, you have to weigh the difference between which of these things are really, you know, the untouchables and which things can we make way for new experiences. I mean, you know, there's only so much revamping and refreshing. You know, they did, what was it, just about 5-6 years ago that they did a refresh on It's a Small World. That's wonderful. How many times can you refresh, you know, the existing stuff before people just go, meh, seen it before, need something? Yeah, everybody is all about, you know, what's new and wonderful and amazing and you know, why I want to spend my money. So you really have to look at the things that have lived their life and need to go on their way versus, you know, what can we bring and put in its place? Can we bring in something that, you know, even if it's small scale, is still thrilling or exciting or something that really immerses you into a part of Walt Disney that you never saw before? That's kind of my blue sky thinking about that.
All right. Well, now, Brad, I'm going to push you for a minute on maybe a more practical side of this challenge, this difficulty in balancing, you know, locals and tourists. And, you know, the big, I think, to me, sort of, you know, top of the agenda battle has to do with literally physical space in Disneyland theme park. You know, there's this concern, right? Because you've got annual pass holders who come all the time, and they come so frequently that they're not even necessarily at Disneyland to ride attractions, right? They go to the park to hang out. And that's great until, you know, the tourists come and they get frustrated because they have to go sit, you know, 3 hours early to get a seat when Fantasmic comes back, or they have to deal with this, you know, extraordinarily large, you know, crowd in lines for quick service dining, or even, you know, they don't do the reservations in advance so much in Disneyland, but then when you go to do the walk-up, you know, the wait is excessive because all these locals have arrived.
You've been to Disneyland.
Yeah, so
that's exactly right.
So how do you deal with this, right? I mean, the last time Disney, you know, just this last year, they increased the annual ticket or the annual pass pricing substantially, and they added more blackout dates to the annual pass blackouts. And they darn near had a revolt on their hands. So what are you going to do here to balance these two sort of critical audiences for the park?
And see, you're nailing it right on the head why I said what I said, because the reality is this. Well, as many realize, and the rumor was being floated around, one of the key reasons why Disney was raising the costs of tickets to the level that they were wasn't as much about making more profit, although they're certainly not against that. Anybody who goes to Disney knows that they love take money out of my pocket for their shareholders, but they literally were raising ticket prices to try to deal with the crowds. They're literally trying to this is what is rumored. They're raising prices because they're trying to use that as well to try to minimize. They're cutting back on their dates because they've got to do something about the level of the crowds, especially when they hit those weekends when the locals show up. And there's just no good way to do it. I mean, you can't lower prices, because then more want to come. Then it's a bigger problem. You can't get more people on the rides than you already get on there. You can't pack them through any faster than you're packing them through. They're really running at such a high level. So the only thing that seems to make sense is you've got to create more volume of Disney experiences to spread it out. And remodeling areas like Bugs Land, remodeling areas like Toontown, those will be great. But in the end, that won't resolve the overall problem. And the overall problem is a typical Southern California problem. Too many people packed into a small, itty-bitty living space. And so they're trying to deal with it. And so now, and I will mention this too. One of the things that I was wrestling with this was, of course, you know, talking about buying up the hotels. I love that, by the way. And I think you picking Fairfield was perfect, Aaron, because being a travel agent, you know, they've got themed rooms at Fairfield, right?
Right, right.
But if you've been through them, it's like, okay, really? You're touting this as a themed room? Seriously? I mean, that my kid's bedroom is more Disney than that room, you know. But anyway, but buying up those properties, what did they pay for that one? They just, was it the carousel they bought so they could clear it out to make the bridge to the parking lot? And they paid incredible amounts of money for that one old hotel to make it a bridge to the parking.
Yeah.
The one thing you could do with a third park is you don't necessarily have to build it right there. There might be ways to get creative, build it a little bit away from Disney, and create a transportation system that could get you. And they couldn't do it too far, and you'd have to be careful where you took it to, because this is Southern California. If you go to do transport in the wrong direction on the wrong road, anybody that's ever lived there can tell you, yeah, you're in trouble. You know those 20-minute, 30-minute rides on the bus in Disney World you guys complain about? Yeah, try 2 hours to get three blocks in right. Southern California.
Some of that conversation on a dad show recently with Corey Day talking about their experience in Southern California when you know he tried to get creative and instead of taking the highway that you know he'd heard was backed up, he tried to go.
Should have called me.
Yeah, tried to go surface streets. That didn't work so well for him.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
So Philip. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brad.
No, so I was going to say, yeah. So, yeah, that's the reason why we've got to do it. You've got to do it because, really, effectively, the only way you're going to deal with appeasing those people and not having to continue to raise prices and find creative ways to stop people from buying more and more tickets, which just drives people away, is to expand the volume. But you can get creative with it. Okay, I'll quit. Move on.
That's all right. So, Philip. You know, you've heard your colleagues here. What's your solution? How are you going to help balance the need to grow as a tourist attraction without alienating your core visitors who are there every weekend and, you know, make sure you're paying the bills?
My colleagues all had great responses, probably way better than mine, but you know, like a big part of the reason I wanted to go was for rides like Mr. Toad's and just the stuff you can't get at Disney World. And so, you know, as a tourist, you know, you kind of enjoy that classic feel and just like original rides. I mean, I know most of those aren't you know, day one, but one idea I was thinking of to kind of get the everyday person in, you know, and your season ticket holders is kind of borrow a little bit and don't everyone kill me for this from Universal and do more of like the simulator rides. I know they have Soarin' and Soarin's always been popular, kind of do something more similar to that. And that would probably, you know, again, probably be perfect for like a Marvel Land and to where, you know, the hardcore local still wants to go try out these new rides, and then your tourist gets, of course, the new rides, and then also these classics. You know, I mean, Mr. Toad's was my main thing. I was like, when we go, we got to ride because I miss it, you know. And
yeah, where else can you take your child to hell, right?
Exactly. I actually remember my brother reminded me that I cried the first time coming out of Mr. Toad's, and I was like, I got to beat it this time. I'm not going to cry this time, and I'm 30 years old, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you raise an interesting point, which is that when you've got a limited amount of physical space available to you, you know, one way to expand the opportunities for people is to use more simulators. I mean, I think
they don't take up a ton of space. So.
Right, right. And I mean, that's, I'm sure, a piece of what went into, you know, Universal's thinking, because they've got a similar issue in Orlando as Disney has in Anaheim, which is that they're penned in.
And same with Universal and Hollywood as well. They're pretty landlocked, if I remember.
Oh, yeah, right. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's an interesting approach. And, you know, that would certainly help give the locals, you know, something more to do, which opens up the classic attractions for the tourists who are looking for that. I almost wonder, though, it seems to me that part of the difficulty is that these classic attractions that the tourists are coming to see, because that's what makes Disneyland unique and different from Walt Disney World in some ways, you know, they're inherently low capacity.
Yeah.
They're only so big, they only move so fast, you know, you can only pump so many people through them. And I don't know. I think that's a real challenge because I don't know the answer to that.
Well, Aaron, let me give you a challenge. What would you think about the idea of going vertical? I mean, when you think about places that are landlocked, they can't go, you know, they can't spread out, they go vertical. What's the possibility, or what are your thoughts about the idea of going vertical? I mean, build a ride on top of ride on top of ride, you know, get something that, you know, that goes vertical instead.
I mean, I think it's almost a necessity. And what's interesting to me is that it's not that long ago that Disneyland took advantage of that in at least some ways, right? I mean, you had the Skyway. Obviously, that closed. You know, there were security issues with it and, you know, operational issues, but they used the Skyway. They still haven't done anything with the People Mover track space, which was a similar situation, right? They took advantage of, you know, going above Tomorrowland. And that's now dead since the you know, the rocket racers were such a flop. I mean, Joe in the chat room is talking about Astro Orbiter at Walt Disney World. That always struck me as kind of ironic, right? That at Disneyland, where the space is at such a premium, you've got Astro Orbiter on the ground. Right?
Yeah, what's up with that? I mean, that's a perfect example of something that could be taken vertical.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think some of the concern at Disneyland is that if you go too vertical, you have, isolated sightline issues, right?
You have sightline issues. You have geophysical issues. You know, there's things that go along with that. I get that. But to me, that seems like the most logical solution. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. And again, these are, you know, still the same sort of core issues of capacity and how you expand capacity. And as long as we're on the subject of capacity, there are some related capacity issues at Disneyland. And the one that, you know, we've kind of talked around a little bit here already, and we mentioned it on the If I Ran DVC show as well, so I'm going to run it past you guys too. As we just said a little bit ago, Disneyland is building this new super luxurious hotel. It was a way to take advantage of this, you know, special tax offer that Orange County was making. But it turns out that the land they're building this super deluxe hotel on is the same land that for about the last, two decades, they've been promising West Coast DVC owners would be the site of a future dedicated DVC resort, vacation club resort. So what are you going to do for these West Coast vacation club owners who have either been, you know, waiting patiently with their Grand Californian points, kind of waiting for their opportunity to trade up to their own resort from their 50 rooms at Grand Californian, or even more so, the ones who, you know, have the money they've been saving up for the announcement of the dedicated Disneyland DVC resort. And I guess, Philip, you haven't gone first yet, so, you know, you're the non-DVC owner of the group, but okay. I'm going to put you on the spot first. How are you going to take care of these West Coast DVC owners?
Well, when you say take care, does that mean we can call my uncle Vito or get rid of him that way?
Guido the Nothing Dragon.
I love it.
Because right now, if I'm a non-DVC owner, that would be my solution, but that can now be traced back to me.
As a DVC owner, I will invest in such a plan.
Thank you.
Let's see.
The Diz Dads podcast does not endorse the offing of DVC owners.
The ideas expressed by panelists does not reflect.
Like some of the guys said before, maybe the new land that they buy out, they could do that with that new land and the new hotel. Maybe renovate Disneyland Hotel and add some rooms there.
Okay, that's an interesting thought. Use one of the existing hotels and do another, you know, dedicated wing kind of thing.
Sure, like they've done at Disney World. Sure.
Right. Well, so, Tim, what do you think? What are you going to do for the West Coast DVC folks?
Well, I think, let me start with what I've experienced with DVC in Florida is that, you know, they've told me straight up, you know, we have to set back a certain number of cash rooms. So, you know, you're not going to be able to have or I don't think the DVC entity would allow you to have one property that is exclusively DVC without any ability to buy a room cash.
Oh, so, sure. Wait, let's yeah, put that aside. There's always going to be somebody who can buy cash rooms. I mean, but we're talking about an old Key West or a Saratoga Springs, a resort that exists for the purpose of the vacation club. And, you know, you've got a few people renting rooms for cash now and then, but it exists as a DVC resort.
Exactly. And I think that's where what my original Blue Sky argument, where that comes into play is you take, you know, one of those places that's right across the street. I don't know in what order you would do this because there's so many moving parts to this puzzle. But, you know, take one of those older places, tear it down, create something that, that a DVC member can just, you know, go to, let's say, a Skyway, walk across or, you know, whatever to that hotel that's specifically for them. You know, you've got the new one, and that's going to be good. It's still not going to be adequate. I mean, when you look at the 50 rooms that are available in Grand Californian, plus, you know, even when you add the stuff that the rooms from the new hotel, that's still not going to satiate the appetite of all the Californians that would like to get into DVC. And I think that's something that that Disney really has to look at is the fact that, hey, there are Californians, you know, of course, Californians generally have some money, or at least a lot of them do, that would like to get into that, but they want to have properties that are available to them in California, in Anaheim. So I think really that's something that you have to seriously consider doing is taking out one, two, maybe even three of the properties that are right across the street there and turn those into properties that that can have a dedicated DVC section.
Okay. Interesting thought. So, you know, Brad, is Tim on the right track or do we need something, you know, maybe more immediate?
Well, I'm not sure how to respond whether Tim's on track. I think, you know, everything that he shared and that Philip shared both are viable. But if the question is, okay, Brad, you're in charge of Disneyland, how do you handle this problem? And I'll be straightforward with you. If it was me, I would be canceling the plan for the exotic hotel that's being built on the property that should have been set aside for DVC. And I speak from a unique position. I got to be careful here that it's not just me and it's the guys running Disneyland. I bought into DVC in 2006. I've been a part of DVC for a long time, and I bought DVC at Disneyland. And that was before Grand Californian had even built.
Okay.
I bought literally, and I'd never been to Disney World. I'd only been to Disneyland. But we bought with two things in mind. Number one, we would love to go to Disney World, but it just never made sense because we couldn't afford it. This made that more reasonable and affordable. Number two, because they walked us through and told us our vision and our goal is to build, we're going to do this at Grand Californian in a couple of years, and then it'll be done, and then we're going to expand from there. I think it'd be great to add on in hotels and add a few rooms here and there, but the problem with the Grand Californian has nothing to do. I mean, it's just got so few rooms. I think to try to get people to buy into Southern California DVC without adding significant rooms, adding a resort big enough with enough rooms to actually become a viable DVC destination. I think they might as well just move on and not worry about it. That's just my opinion. But I realize they're probably not going to take it back. So there is a parking lot. If you've been there, there's a parking lot behind Rainforest Cafe. That's the parking lot area for Downtown Disney. There are some areas there where they own there. And when you were talking about somebody was talking about going up. What I would say is take some of that land that's right next to the park where they can create some really valuable experiences like they do with the Grand Californian with its own private entrance, et cetera, et cetera. Go up with parking. Go to large parking resorts, and because that parking there is a big area and it's all flat, one-level parking on the backside of Downtown Disney. Right. Put that parking underground. Do Animal Kingdom. Let them park there. I mean, take the land you have and maximize it and either get serious about DVC or just move on from it. Seriously, because I think 20 more rooms here and 50 more rooms there is never going to make Disneyland a viable DVC destination.
I love that idea, Brad, because those parking lots, I mean, how much easier is it to build a parking ramp that goes up 8 floors versus building a luxury hotel that goes up 8 floors? You know, it's much more viable to do it that way. And then you have other parking lots that you can scrape off and create, like you said, a third gate or create, you know, more DVC property. There's a lot of things that then open itself up there.
Sure. Well, and here's the other interesting part about that, too, that I hadn't really thought about it until we started talking about it this evening. But, you know, if you build these multi-story, you know, parking garages, theoretically, even a multi-story parking garage with a hotel on top of it, right? What you start to develop, assuming you can get away with it in Southern California, I know they have some height restriction issues in some places, but, you know, what you can start to do is maybe reclaim some of that creation of a bubble. Right? Because if you do them on a couple of sides, you know, and do something on the sides of those buildings, kind of like they've done at Art of Animation, right? Where you've got the animation drawings, you know, on the side of the buildings, you know, now you're starting to create that envelope.
That little immersion that we were talking about.
Right.
And if you build it that close to the parks, you create paths that take you on the journey going into Disney. The more they do that, instead of crossing Harbor Boulevard in typical SoCal traffic, creating it where they literally, like, I love where you're going with that, Aaron. You drive underneath that parking, and basically you now can enter the bubble. When you go out the other side of the building, you go on Art of Animation paths that take you right into the Disney bubble. Now, I like that. That would work.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, I've got one other issue on my agenda here, and then I'm going to kind of open it up and see if there are other issues that you really think we ought to be addressing. But the last one that was on my agenda is, and I think it's sort of an ongoing issue a little bit with Disneyland, and that is, what do you think needs to be done going forward with the whole kind of picture of dining at Disneyland? I feel like, to some extent, you know, Walt Disney World has really sort of really aggressively sort of gotten into improving the dining scene, creating more kinds of options, and really, you know, if you look at, for example, a lot of the more recent restaurants that they've opened there, places like Tiffin and Skipper's Canteen, and even going back a little bit, places like Jico, and even going back farther, Whispering Canyon, you know, really immersive theming, a lot of experience, not just dining. And it feels like, to me, there isn't really much of that at Disneyland. So what do you do to up the dining game at Disneyland? Because realistically, you know, that's a growth area, right? That's an opportunity at Disneyland, because there's still a lot of guests that you're losing their dining dollars across the street. So how do you offer them some new opportunities that compel them really to be willing to spend the extra dollars for theme park dining when they can get Denny's across the street? And Brad, I think I'll let you get started on that one.
Well, I think part of it, you know, when you look at, you had a good point of some of the themed type dining at Disney World. First off, let's just say this, for those of you who haven't been to Disneyland as a whole, when you go to their restaurants and their quick service and stuff, they have some great dining at Disneyland. And I've never feel like I get shortchanged there, but you're exactly right. There's limited amounts, but don't you feel that a lot of that is simply because the reason we have so much more at Disney World is we have so many more resorts. We entered the world. And so we don't go, there's no across the street we can go to. Disney owns everything that's around them.
There's no question about that. But here's what I'm getting at, right? At Disneyland, there's fantastic high-end dining, but there's not as much what to me is dining really for the whole family so much, right? That's a great experience for everybody, as opposed to being a great experience for, you know, the adults and older kids.
Yep. And this comes back. These are the things, you know, this is us running it. And we're clearly not the guys that I would not get hired, because I'm not looking to give them the highest profit available by sucking blood out of turnips. So clearly I'll never get the job. But yeah, exactly right. And what I was going to say was, so you can't, because it's a smaller bubble, and because you can't really, you know, expanding outside of that bubble becomes problematic. I think maybe the best step would be to take back the land known as Downtown Disney. That would be another thing where possibly you could expand it more, do some more there. But I think I would begin to, because I personally think, and boy, I'll get in trouble with some people because some of their favorite restaurants, because that's where most people end up going. If they don't eat in the park, they go to Downtown Disney. That's where we always, rarely would we go across the street to the other places. We would figure out a place downtown. But anyway, I would start to take back some of those restaurants and encourage those companies that are doing it and saying, listen, you're still going to make a ton of money. You're still going to love but what we want you to do is we want you to make this more of a genuine Disney experience. We want these to have carry the theme. We have limited space here. We have a limited bubble. We need this to be a part of our bubble. And with that, they're going to have to be brave enough to take a place like Rainforest Cafe and let it become moderate dining. Don't let everything that's Downtown Disney be this highly expensive, difficult place to be a part of. They're going to have to create those opportunities where the expenses and there has to be something offered for more moderate budgets.
Sure.
And then more things that are themed that are clearly, man, I love Jazz Kitchen. I don't necessarily like the food, but we Rainforest was a thing we did every time we went, pretty much, because I loved the theming. But how much better would that theming be if I was experiencing, a Trader's Cafe or something that's more Disney, something that gives me more of that immersion experience? So I would claim back the land in Downtown Disney, start to encourage companies to go more Disney themed, and try to create something down there that keeps people from, like you saying, going to Denny's. Because other than that, go across the street and buy Denny's.
All right. So Philip, how about you? What are you going to do to, you know, provide some different kinds of truly Disney dining experiences for those Disneyland guests?
I think Brad pretty much knocked it out of the park on that one. Like when I went, you know, you kind of look ahead and you see the dining options weren't, you know, as good as Disney World. So you kind of pinpointed like ones that, you know, had something special. You know, Blue Bayou was number one on my list, you know. And
you and everybody else's.
Right.
And then, yeah.
You just kind of, you know, there's, you know, when you just look at the list, you know, if you're coming there for your first time, you're like, I got to do, you know, these particular ones. And so, I mean, there really wasn't a ton of options, you know, when you do that. I mean, it was like, okay, well, I could go to Rainforest anytime, you know, so you kind of, you know, so I mean, I really don't have much of a thought on how to change it, because Brad, I think he just summed it up the best. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a problem. I'll agree with that one.
All right, so Tim, you have anything to add to Brad's proposal?
Well, yeah, you know, I think about, and I think Philip hit the nail on the head here. Yeah, I can go to a Rainforest Cafe and a number of different non-Disney places. So why would I want to go to a Rainforest Cafe on a Disney property? I think about, you know, at Disneyland Resort, there are so few places that are, you know, that are good. Now, in California Adventure, you've got one big area, and then if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. It's like a whole bunch of the counter service restaurants in one little grouping. And then the nicer restaurants are few and far between, and when you find one, they're not open or don't have any reservations available.
Or
so
they're
going to
cost you a kidney.
Exactly.
I mean, got some great restaurants, but whoa.
Yeah. So you end up walking down, you know, all the way down to downtown Disney to go to a place like Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen, which I absolutely adore. I love that place. But, you know, why don't we take some Disney concepts? For example, on the Disney Dream, Animator's Palette was so popular with such a large swath of people. Why don't you take a concept like that and put it into the, you know, somewhere in Disneyland where you where you've got a place where people can go and have, you know, fantastic meal and experience that whole
great
thing.
Idea.
If you've ever been in Animator's Palette, it is such an experience. It's not just a meal, it's a destination unto itself. So, you know, to create those sorts of things, it makes people want to go there. It makes people want to get those advanced dining reservations and you know, fight for it. When, as soon as you can get those reservations in, you want to get them in because, oh, man, this place is so cool. I want to see that. I want to do that. It's kind of like, you know, when Beast Palace opened and Be Our Guest in Disney World, it's a destination restaurant. It's something that people want to see.
That's the word right there. That's the key. That's it. It's destination dining. It's so weird whenever I work with a client who's been a Disney World person and they're coming out to Disneyland for the first time and they say, okay, so we're 6 months out, so we need to start planning dining, right? It's like, no, welcome to Disneyland.
No, not for California.
Yeah, it's like Blue Bayou. There's one or two places that you're going to have to book maybe 30 days out. And the rest, you just kind of, you're not going to need it because there's so little destination Disney experience dining. How about take Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen and turn it into Princess and the Frog? You don't have to change the menu. You don't have to change what you do. You
exactly.
Just make it Disney destination dining.
You bring in the theme. You bring in the elements of the Princess and the Frog that don't exist.
Bring in
exist
a character
anywhere.
Element. You'll
okay,
sell
but,
out.
Yeah. But let me ask
make
you
it,
this.
You can make it why, character dining.
Why are you going to do that in Ralph Brennan's in Downtown Disney? Why not do that at Cafe Orleans in the park?
Well, that
I'm totally
too.
Good with that.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
You
I mean, this is what
like
I'm talking
that.
About. When you think about it, at California Adventure, you've got really, as far as I can remember, and I'm not the super expert on Disneyland, but seems to me on the California Adventure side, you've got Carthay Circle and you've got the Wine Country Trattoria, right? Two
right,
really
that's
nice
what you got.
Table service restaurants, and that's it. Other than
and
that,
they're super expensive.
Yeah, and they're expensive. Trattoria is not awful, but they're pricey. And then you've got the one sort of
store.
Massive, you know, food court for quick service options. You've got you do have the character dining at Ariel's Grotto, but you don't have, I mean, even the Trattoria and to a lesser extent, Carthay Circle. I mean, Carthay Circle has its own special thing, right? I mean, it's signature dining. It's sort of, I always think of it as sort of the California Grill of DCA.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's a very nice lounge, by the way. They've got nice lounge to just go sit and cool off and have a drink. It's wonderful.
But what it's missing is anything like, you know, 50s Prime Time, Sci-Fi Dine-In, Tusker House, you know, any kind of a restaurant that is a themed dining experience in the park. That
I can't think of any.
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right.
And it just it drives me crazy. It's like this is a missed opportunity.
And I agree totally. But I don't think it has to be an either or. I think they really need to be characterizing both of that. And Tech Mickey just mentioned in the
yeah, that's
chat
Joe.
Room. Oh, is that Joe?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Joe.
You know,
that's Joe.
That, and he
Joe
makes
Masters.
A good point. Hopefully, you know, maybe the fact that you create some of these Disney experiences outside of the park helps to keep some of the locals and move some of that crowd out of the parks and into it. But I totally agree, Aaron. It's missing everywhere at Disneyland. That's the one thing about Disney World that I love the most when I go there is the fact that when I cross underneath that sign, I've entered an entirely different world, and I love it. I pay the money. I you know, I hawk the children, whatever. But with Disneyland, it's a very different thing. I go in and I enjoy the park experience, and then I walk out of it. And even if I'm staying which I almost always do now, stay in one of the Disney hotels. It's still, I walk, it's like I left Disney, the bubble, and then I walk downtown Disney, which is a really nice shopping area, and then I go into my hotel. The bubble doesn't extend past right. the promenade between two parks.
Oh, and I did finally think there is one, I finally came up with one well-themed dining establishment that I could think of in DCA, Flo's V8.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Sure.
You get the Cars Land thing. But again, it's still pretty much
more of a counter service. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, more of a counter service. Well, there's a well-themed one called Club 33, but...
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
What is it, a 33-year wait? Is that what 33 is about?
Yeah, and Brad's going to be making the investment so he can bring us all with him.
Yeah, there you go. Wait. I've been twice now, but I won't be buying in. I'll be going because friends invited me. So, Aaron, just plan your next trip when I'm out there. I'll take you.
There you go.
You other right. guys? I don't know. You'll have to pay big money.
Oh, thanks, Brad. You're such a buddy.
So we've pretty much covered the agenda that I had set aside, and we're really kind of out of our allotted time. But before we go away, I did want to throw things open. We've got a few guys in the chat room. Anything that we haven't talked about, guys, that you really feel like we should address before we step away from If I Ran Disneyland? And I guess I should extend that to the panel as well. You know, anybody here have a Disneyland topic that you just feel like maybe, you know, we need to explore a little bit before we wrap this up?
Okay, I'll give you my little beef, and that's as most of you know. When I was there in August, I lost my wallet first night, you know, at California Adventure. Ultimately, my wallet turned up. Somebody found it and turned it into the Disneyland Hotel. Well, guess what? I wasn't staying in the Disneyland Hotel. So somehow or another, the word that they found my wallet didn't get back to the main lost and found until well after I'd left California. Wow. So
no, wait, Tim, this is amazing because what you're describing mirrors almost exactly the experience that my wife had at Disneyland when she dropped her wallet at Disneyland. And it was very distinctive, and so it finally did turn up, but not till after we were gone.
Mm-hmm. So, again, it's missing that total immersive bubbles experience, because somebody at the Disneyland Hotel that saw that wallet should have immediately been on the horn to the people at the main lost and found, am I right, and said, oh, we found this. Who does it belong to? It's too disconnected. How can you be so disconnected and be a Disney resort?
Yeah, Lost and Found is sort of a unique challenge, I think, at you know, both parks. I mean, you just got so many people that it's a difficult issue. But you're right. I mean, at its core, it's a communication thing. And as a unified resort, they ought to be able to communicate this stuff better.
I've never had that same problem at Disney World. So I'm just saying, they could learn a lesson there.
The thing about Disneyland, too, is it's not just that. If you've dealt with Disney, with planning or working with people to book your trips and stuff to Disneyland, it is a completely different experience on every level. You call the dining line, you call the hotel direct, you call. And I hate to say it, I'm a Disneyland guy. I love Disneyland; it's my favorite park. But they're very dysfunctional. The system, the entire system there, is very, very different. And you're right. I've had the craziest stuff happen. When dealing with people's trips to Disneyland compared to Disney World. And to me, that was one of the things I was going to mention. I'm going to mention real quick. One thing I had on my list, restore the original traditions training, get back to making that experience of the training of individuals, not getting everybody that will work for $8 an hour. The truth is most people will still come and work for minimum wage, whatever it is, but get back to making sure those people, that it matters to the people that work the history and the tradition, so they're excited to help people and go above and beyond. And the other thing I had, the two other things I had was, first off, they need to come up with a plan. Darcy was talking about it. He said he got to looking about his trip there, and he goes, but it seemed like there was just no place to stay. They've got to do something about creating, whatever they do next, they need to create moderate level experience somewhere besides saying, go stay at something that we don't own. unless you want to pay, you know, exorbitant amounts at all of our deluxe. It's everything they have that's Disney's deluxe. And lastly, it's time for Disney to bite the bullet, to do what's got to be done before something bad happens. It's time to make safety and security the priority. I know it's going to suck to have metal detectors and bag scanners, but you know what? That just means we got to build a system where there's more metal detectors and more bag scanners where you can crank the people through that you need, but they've got to do this before something tragic happens. And it's coming, guys. If you read the news the last week, a couple of them already, and that one guy, that Disney World, he would have never admitted he had that gun. He only said it because they picked right. him to scan him.
To one scanner.
Yeah, so yep. He went ahead and said, before you scan me, by the way, I've got a gun on me. It's time to stop acting like the elephant in the room is going to play and get along, especially if in Southern California. Okay, I haven't lived in Florida, so maybe it's just as bad, but I'm just telling you, after my 7 years in SoCal, I can tell you that the stories are correct. It's a dangerous place to be, and they got to do it anyway. That's all the other things I needed to add.
All right. Anybody else, either in the chat or in the group? I mean, there's some discussion here about expanding Magic Bands to Disneyland, and I know that is a running sort of discussion. My understanding is that the leading candidate for something Magic Band-like at Disneyland is a ride reservation system, but one that's totally smartphone-based, one that doesn't rely on Magic Bands at all. I don't know for sure why that is, because it doesn't seem to me like it's, you know, that big a difference. I guess it helps keep them from having to install the scanners or something, but I don't know. I don't have the answer to that yet. It does seem that, you know, the age of paper fast passes seems to be passing, if not already passed. And, you know, Disneyland is holding on to them. This is, I think, a bit of a nod to the locals thing. You know, the locals the locals like them. They like what they're used to. But I'm starting to feel like, you know, as we see other resort destinations adopting more of this RFID technology, it won't be long before Disneyland is the last ones not using it, which would be a real shame given how Walt Disney World was sort of at the forefront.
You're exactly right. It's a concept that all of us griped about it when it first came out, but they tweaked it. They got it figured out. You know, for the most part, it's proven, tried and true. Why wouldn't you go with a technology that exists, that's already been tested out? You know, the Magic Bands are good for after. Yeah, you know, my point here is an annual pass holder can keep the same Magic Band, just add his ticket to his Magic Band, and ta-da, you know, no problem. I don't understand.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I think we've covered what we could cover. We're up against time here, and I've got family calling me upstairs. So, you know, you've heard what our panel thought about what they would do if they ran Disneyland. We'd love to hear from you and love to hear what you would do if you were running Disneyland. You can tell us by emailing us at podcast@disdads.com. You can visit our blog, disdads.com, where the recording of this podcast will be posted soon, probably later tonight. You can tweet us at disdadspodcast on Twitter and visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/disdadspodcast. We'll be live again the first Sunday of next month, first Sunday of December. We'll be live again right here at diztalkradio.com. That will be December 4th, talking Marvel Cinematic Universe on the small screen, television Marvel Cinematic Universe. But for now, I've been Aaron Repmaster with Brad Coates.
Thanks, guys. It's been a blast.
Philip Holt.
Take it easy.
And Tim Hicks.
Thanks for joining us tonight. It's been fun.
Talk to you next time.
There we go.
And that's the news.
All the news is Fetch a Prince.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that based on all the plans we have, none of us are getting hired. Because all we're doing is spending Disney's money.
Yep.
Now, doing some of that restaurant stuff, we'd earn some money that way.
Yeah, we can earn the money back. Open up that DVC. It's the cash cow.
For real. Love that jazzy outro music.
Yeah, I listened to a lot of royalty-free music before I picked this particular riff.
Nice. Well, there's a Broncos game that's calling me, so...
All right, well, go check out your Broncos game, Tim. You're free to go anytime you want. I'm just playing out the music so that I can, include it when I post the show.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. Hey, Aaron, I'll see you in a couple days for the next one.
That's right.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care, fellas. See you later.
Aaron?
Yep.
What would you think about the Volcano Bay Institute?
Oh, we're still live.
Sorry.
But chatting generally about Volcano Bay, I thought it was interesting. You know, there's a lot going on there, and really more than I expected. Thanks so much, everybody. Hope to have you tuning in next time.